Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to another edition of the Paleo Solution Podcast. Before we get to the fun, here's a quick word from one of our sponsors.
When I went back to the SEAL teams as their physician, the SEALs would obviously go see all the experts about their sports medicine issues, but then they would come into my office because I was in the same space, and they'd come in my office and close the door and go, hey, man, let me tell you what's really going on with me. And there was this generalized sort of interesting confluence of very similar symptoms and complaints across all of these guys. Pretty much every guy who came to complain to me about these symptoms was using Ambien to sleep every night. And often 3 to 4 times the recommended doses of Ambien, and sometimes chasing that down with a couple of cocktails.
Over 9 million Americans rely on prescription sleep aids like Ambien. But it doesn't seem to be working.
Drugging yourself to sleep doesn't work. You only drug yourself unconscious. You don't drug yourself to sleep. And so when we study people sleeping on sleep drugs, it's not normal sleep. And so they aren't getting all of the goodness that we know happens from sleep.
Dr. Kirk Parsley created the sleep cocktail to help those Navy SEALs who were coming to him for help. Now that same product is available to the rest of us. Go to robwolf.com/sleepcocktail and use code ROBWOLF10 to save 10%.
Hey folks, Rob Wolf here, another edition of the Paleo Solution Podcast. Super excited for today's guest. I don't know if she's smarter, better looking, funnier, or what, but she's got all of that and more. This is Grace Liu. She is a PharmD. She is the founder of the Gut Institute and also the founder of the insanely popular podcast, The Gut Guardians. Grace, how are you doing?
I'm doing awesome. 2016 cool. Is just like on fire. Yeah.
Fantastic. You are indeed in fuego. So I'm sure that pretty much everybody that follows the podcast it knows about you. You had are you still maintaining the Animal Farm?
No, I've kind of moved it over to the Gut Institute, okay. But then I've just got too busy, and I'm going to start blogging again. I promise. Yeah.
Okay.
There's
okay.
So much data. Yeah, and we're going to resurrect a lot of cool things on there.
You had that thing. Yeah, was going for like 6 years, and that was a mountain of stuff.
I know. Oh, yeah, like I know, 8 years, and on its own, like it would generate, oh my gosh, thousands of hits. It's awesome. But I have a book coming out in October.
Nice.
Yeah. And it'll be all about secrets of your microbiome. Yeah. And we're still thinking about the title, and we have over 200 recipes from my sister and I, all about gut microbiota. Awesome recipes with funky things like psyllium and inulin and all kinds of things.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, that'll be coming out later.
Nice, right on. Well, Grace, tell everybody about your background. You have a very interesting, varied background. You've lived internationally. Like, you have a pretty fascinating experiential pool that you draw from in your functional medicine practice. Tell folks about some of that.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you so much for having me on. I actually got into health and functional medicine because of you, Rob. Back in 2008.
Sucker.
Yeah. I mean, like, fell into the internet as I was updating some of the slides I was doing for classes I was lecturing at the pharmacy schools. And I was like, wow, everything I'm teaching is like totally wrong. And then there's this Rob Wolf guy saying, you know, eating gluten-free and changing your diet will reverse all these diseases. Everything I treat, you know, with drugs, hypertension, diabetes, you know, obesity, metabolic syndrome, and PMS, you know, infertility. I was like, who is this guy? So I signed up for CrossFit, loved it, loved my gym out in Walnut Creek, Diablo CrossFit. Mm-hmm. It just radically changed my life. I heard you had the Nutra workshop. You and Nikki had it out in Chico. I joined. Oh my gosh. That just critically was the game changer for my whole life. My sister and I, we decided to go paleo, and we went gluten-free, and her third daughter actually was born autistic, had all the, you know, from the early beginning, you know, was in milestones, very hostile. And after we went gluten-free, 80-90% of all her neurological symptoms went away. She became pretty much neurotypical, yeah, from neuroatypical. So we were just bought in no one else believed it. We came, you know, my whole family's medical, my parents, you know, everybody. So it was a tough transition for me. But after I moved to Shanghai, it was much easier actually because I had time to just devote to it. I wasn't working full time anymore because my license didn't work over there. And I just totally embraced functional medicine after that and got certified, you know, did the AFMCP, applying functional medicine to clinical practice. And then that just ramped up my understanding of gut health, actually.
That's awesome. That's fantastic.
Yeah, so thank you so much, Rob. Yeah, you've been super integral to a lot of my understanding of nutrition, biochemistry, health, and everything ancestral.
Well, I'm hugely honored that I had a small role to play maybe in the early stages of your work, but you have, if we were to call you a student or a protege or something like that, which would be a massive stretch to start off with, but you have definitely exceeded me in your knowledge of all this material. So it's incredibly impressive where you've taken all this and what you're doing with the Gut Institute. I remember, I think Jimmy Moore interviewed me at the end of 2009, 2010 on his podcast. Uh-huh. And he said, you know, what do you think the next stage of all this stuff is? And I was kind of like, well, the gut, like the gut's going to be like the next thing, you know, gut genomics and all this stuff. Yeah. And it's kind of wacky to think back. That was, you know, 5-6 years ago, but it was a completely different world than the one that we live in now with regards to what we understand about gut health. And it's always been kind of baked in the cake. I mean, even back with like Mike Eads and Protein Power Life Plan, but we just had no idea back then.
We had no idea. And you predicted it totally right on. I mean, you started with the gut. You yourself had like the gut, you know, issues, and then they totally transformed going paleo. And that's what happened to thousands, millions, tens of millions of people, when they try paleo. I mean, it's so profound for people, and people don't realize like this, our diet could be so detrimental to our health, something that we eat 3-4 times a day.
Right.
And that's what the gut microbiota studies. We can shift things so radically in just one meal. And we know that already. When people go paleo, they can reverse all kinds of conditions. I remember at the CrossFit Nutri workshop that you and Nikki had in Chico, I remember how many stories you had. All these women were getting knocked up at your gym, and they prior they were totally infertile. So within just a month or two, you know, you wouldn't sign them up unless they went diet and CrossFit, you know, working out. So they got double benefits.
And they got knocked up too. So
and they're like, sorry, you know, you had to make them sign a disclaimer of increased, you know, potent fertility just by signing up.
Yeah, when we were still
in the water.
Yeah, when we were still using the contract thing. Like there was a boxer. It's like if you're a female of childbearing age, it is highly likely you will, you know, your fertility will increase and please acknowledge this and everything. And people are like, what is this? I'm like, just trust me.
It's not like
me.
All the male coaches are. Like Immaculate Conception and like your super hotness, Rob, like touch them, but it was the combination of, you know, ancestral diet and lifestyle.
Yeah. It was crazy. And you know, all these gyms, you cruise around them and like, there's like baby carriers everywhere and people doing thrusters with kids in their papoose, you know, that they're carrying them around. So it's really profound stuff. So, you know, from your point of entry with this, you know, kind of paleo, gluten-free, and then really going deep on the functional medicine side of things, like you've definitely expanded out kind of your sphere of influence and kind of where you try to direct people. And clearly you're focusing very, very heavily on the gut, which I think is, you know, it's ironic in a way because we're like, well, this person's a gut expert. But then when we look at the fact that cardiovascular disease, neurodegenerative disease, all kinds of metabolic derangement, type 2 diabetes, insulin resistance, all seems to have an underpinning with gut issues.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like the unified field theory with all this stuff, but how has your perspective on all this stuff changed? Like, I know that you're really trying to get folks with an enriched gut microbiome so that they're more resilient, they can handle insults from, you know, Neolithic foods. Like how has all that grown over time for you?
So I, like a lot of people, you know, in paleo land, and I might've even influenced you in some ways, you know, I went really low carb, even though I was actually healthy, I didn't need to, but But because there were enough people in the blogosphere who were ill and they found a lot of benefit going low carb, I thought that's just something I would benefit from. So I did try it, you know, and I tried it for probably way too long because I tend to be this like OCD kind of, you know, really super extreme health person. And I was doing like all these elite, well, not really elite, but for me, they were like endurance events, you know, tries, sprint tries, and half marathons. That was like a really bad idea for me. I didn't have adrenal problems, but I got really, really damaged from a hormone, a synthetic hormone. It was in the Mirena IUD, and I didn't realize how bad it was. And this is part of the reason why I just like totally have left arm because it's so damaging. Everyone that I do is damaging. And then at the time, you know, I turned to the internet, nothing came up on it. But now you turn to the internet, there's all these class action suits, you know, all these women getting damaged, their HPA access is damaged. You know, I just had a lot of damage with it. Same thing happens with many other medications too, like the male pattern baldness medications, you know, 5-alpha reductase inhibitors and other really potent synthetic hormone blockers. They do the same thing for men. They make things really broken. Anyway, so I didn't have that, but I had that combination and then I got a big gut hit actually as a result. And initially when I did go low carb, like it helped me, you know, but when you, if someone pushes beyond their adrenal threshold, kind of, then the gut suffers. So when I work with people now, because it just seems like everyone is affected adrenally, and we can look at this on testing. You can ask them. I do a survey. No one passes to have perfect adrenaline and perfect cortisol regulation. You know, no one passes because I think in this day and age, everyone stays up late. They've had multiple stressors, multiple kids, multiple mortgages, you know, and career things. It's hard to escape that. Even me, you know, and I only work part time, you know, and I have a lot of luxuries. But so my focus has come down to like really evaluating adrenals and then getting them right. Because if you don't have enough of like the correct cortisol regulation, you can't heal the gut. The gut requires like adequate amount of cortisol and not too much. It's like this sweet spot, kind of like a Goldilocks sweet spot. So my goal is to, you know, get everyone amplified on that, get their adrenals in line, plugged in, you know, now. Just like gut recovery, I have so many tools, you know, and a lot of them are plant-based botanicals, things that would not normally be used for gut. They work really super well for the gut, not just fiber. Fiber alone can't do a lot, actually. We have to mend the tissue at the cellular level, actually, and that requires the steroids and vitamins, nutrients, minerals, and actually a lot of adequate adrenal function because we need like the right corticosteroids, you know, we need adequate prostaglandins. And a lot of these, we actually have to have don't want so much of the catabolic hormone pathways, but the anabolic ones. Right. I'm not saying like people should be super high testosterone, you know, warriors initially, but eventually that's the goal. Right. You know, women should become these fertile feminine fires, you know, and the men, testosterone warriors. This is how we're meant to be ancestrally.
Oh, that's going to be a controversial topic, although I think most of the people that follow this scene are kind of knuckle-dragging misanthropes anyway, so it'll probably be fine. But so, Grace, have you messed around much with the Dutch testing?
Like love the Dutch testing. I was so lucky. I met Mark Newman when I was in Shanghai. We chatted a lot on email, and he sent me a bunch of kits. But my practice hadn't really launched there, so I didn't really use a lot of them. But now I use it quite consistently. It's so awesome. His test is amazing. I mean, I love all the testing. Genova has actually very similar urine testing too, and you can get really great ratios. I also have this drive actually for cancer prevention, both primary and secondary cancer prevention, because a lot of my girlfriends are touched by this. And this test is just super awesome. Like you can see the methylation pattern and then the ratio of like not very good estrogens and compared with very good estrogens. For instance, mine, after being paleo, thanks to you and Nikki, you know, after being paleo 7 or 8 years, when I did the Dutch test, my God, like my ratio of like good estrogens over bad estrogens was like 20 times over than healthy controls, more 20 times better than like a cancer subject, you know. And it was like way above normal, like all things paleo. We can get great A1Cs, we get great, vasculature, no diabetes, no hypertension, no high, bad cholesterol, small dense cholesterol. We have very good, fluffy cholesterol and good HDLs, HDL2s that are really protective. So this hormone pattern that comes out of the Dutch is like amazing. You can see it all.
Right. Talk people through that a little bit. I mean, it's kind of a wacky thing because even something like the 3 or 4 point cortisol reading or a saliva hormone testing, which seems to be, it's archaic compared to what this Dutch testing is, but this is like super cutting edge, holy smoke stuff for conventional medicine. Like they're just
salivary is, but just salivary is just not super accurate. That's the problem. And then people who are kind of, I don't know how to categorize it, but they're either fast salicylators or fast methylators or fast something. They move cortisol into a metabolite very quickly, but the cortisol metabolites are equally as strong, or at least they still have a lot of potency, so they still have all the signs of high cholesterol.
High cortisol.
High cortisol. Cortisol.
So yeah. Just for folks that maybe aren't super familiar with this, the 3 or 4 point cortisol testing can tell you ideally we have relatively higher cortisol levels in the AM, then they tend to kind of bottom out a little bit in the middle afternoon, go up a little bit, and then they tend to go lower in the evening, at least as a general trend. People who are kind of broken, we oftentimes see what kind of a flip circadian rhythm where the levels are quite high in the evening and low in the morning. But what's interesting about that, and I was not aware of the Dutch testing until I listened to Chris Kelly's podcast where he was interviewing. What's his name again? The founder of the company?
Mark Newman.
Yeah, it was just fascinating. He was talking about the fact that if cortisol looks low, it doesn't necessarily mean that production is low, that clearance may be exceptionally high, we may be using it for a variety of different purposes. And depending on how it's used, then we get different metabolic, endpoints with that because it's flowing through different metabolic pathways. And so doing a full accounting, we can kind of see where that allocation of resources is going. A cortisol level could be the same in 5 or 6 different people, but the metabolites could be completely different, which means that cortisol is being handled in completely different ways. Do you see any rough patterns with that? Like somebody who kind of has this low cortisol, like their low AM level and high PM level, what are some different ways that cortisol is getting handled so that, they may look similar on salivary testing, but they're totally different on Dutch testing?
Well, so for one, I actually hardly ever ran salivary. I just didn't find them super reliable. I would just ask people how they felt.
Gotcha.
And that would correlate pretty well with adrenal function if they were in tune with their body. So I have a lot of women, they're not very in tune with their body. They just seem to deny their body. So they don't read the signs very well at all. You can't believe them.
Right.
Yeah. Also, there's a couple people you can't believe if they have really high pain tolerance. Like they're the warriors, the true warriors. So I can't really listen to what they say either because none of it's true. But in general, someone who has a typical salivary pattern where, like you mentioned, they're like tired but wired at night. So there's a cortisol spike, which normally at night we're getting ready for bed. Everything should start coming down. And these people who are flatlined in the morning, they can't get out of bed. They're super tired. And you're supposed to have a little spike in cortisol in the morning on salivary testing or otherwise testing. There's a little spike. But in general, the serum level should be below 10. And what I find is that a lot of parts of the salivary, if I happen to have the salivary data, it does correlate okay with the Dutch, I think. What I think makes the difference the most, because just like gut testing and gut microbiota testing using either Genova or Ubiome, we can change things so rapidly. In just one meal, the data is going to look completely different. Mm-hmm. So when I had my initial Dutch test, I was really worried about a friend, someone who had just recently got diagnosed with with a cancer at the time, and it's really sad for her. So when I had my Dutch test done, I normally am super relaxed at night. I go to bed at 8:30, but I was trying to stay up for the 10. I don't know. You have to do a 10 o'clock. I was doing the 4 times cortisol urine spot test, and I stayed up, and I had this peak. And I know, normally I don't have that peak, then when I repeated, you know, it was all like totally normal and fine. But we can certainly shift things super quickly on any kind of testing. So it's not always reliable like that. And when I work with clients, I really want to see them shift very rapidly so we can get the gut healing. When I work with people and I help them rebuild their biome, we want that because we don't want dysregulated cortisol ever, unless necessary, you know, because it's only meant to save us from a saber-toothed tiger, you know, we're running right. from lava from this, you know, volcano, you know, rapidly, you know, erupting volcano. We don't want it on all day, every day. And it's super catabolic. So what that means is people can't lay down muscle. You can't lay down nothing. And your organs are breaking down. You know, your gut's breaking down. Your tissues are breaking down. Right. Your brain's breaking down. You're shrinking. Studies show high cortisol, you know, is highly related to low volume brain volume. So we want to build up our gut. We want it strong. We want the muscles there strong. So I, you know, do lots of like botanicals now, you know, really gentle like German chamomile and other botanicals. Boswellia has been like a super great extract for me. It's not actually great. You know, it's actually not known as an adrenal extract or anything like that. But I've been using it because it blocks histamine. And it degrades our organs. It's catabolic. It makes the gut lining and mucosa, like whether it's sinuses, vaginal or gut mucosa, you know, histamine is not great. And histamine is produced by all of our toxic gut flora. So this is what I look out for on urine testing as well as gut testing. When I do the urine test, I'm looking for metabolites from Clostridium, which is super, super nasty. And you know what raises Clostridium? Potato starch.
Oh, really? Really? Oh, that's ironic. I was going to ask you about the monocropping via potato starch or really any, let's, well, if you want to shift into that, like, you know, we've had lots of people get some success from low carb interventions, ketogenic interventions, but then sometimes the benefits start shifting towards maybe some problems. And then there was some awareness that maybe the gut biome was being starved of fermentable carbohydrates. Maybe they were digging into the mucosal layer, which is rich in proteoglycans, and so the gut bugs were chewing through this mucosa that acts as kind of a condom between the epithelial cells and the intestinal contents.
And that condom is as big as a tennis court, as big as your house.
Right, right. So there's a lot of surface area there.
Feet. Yeah, 2,700 square feet, about, they estimate.
You know, it's pretty well understood that like gingivitis, yeah, that's a huge condom. Like, go slow and be gentle.
lots of coconut oil.
Yeah, lots of coconut oil on that one. You know, it's well understood in the medical literature that dental problems like gingivitis, gum inflammation, increases cardiovascular disease problems and whatnot. And it's really underappreciated that you have like 1,000 times more acreage in your gut than you do in your mouth. So if you've got inflammation in your gut, you've got, you know, orders of magnitude greater potential to elicit inflammatory responses. So clearly keeping all that stuff happy is important. And so there was some buzz for a while about potato starch, and you know, I gave it a shot, and I definitely felt like things improved for a brief period of time, and then I started
kind of crashed
on it. So explain to people what the story is with
and
that.
I actually know a ton of people that do, you know, and you know, I think people just don't. They're not. It's not that they're not honest on the internet, but they, you know, it's hard to figure out things initially, right?
Right.
So I've seen hundreds of gut testing and dozens of people that had been on the potato starch, and it's really sad. Like they lose the whole human gut signature. Their gut no longer looks like a human signature. There's high clostridium, a whole bunch of things. If you do urine testing, they are just full of gut inflammation, actually. Just, you know, a lot of people have inflammation. They don't even realize it, right? Unless you do testing. You really can't know. Like tons of people had vitamin D deficiency. They didn't know. They took vitamin D and then they feel super great, right? But a lot of times people have signs of really subtle signs, silent signs of inflammation, and they don't know. And I saw problems because potato starch, when you look at it, it feeds yeast. It feeds a whole bunch of yeast, aspergillus, candida, saccharomyces, all of them. Because these are really fundamental fungi life forms that come way billions of years before humans. And even through the evolutionary time, they could break down raw things better than we could. So they are okay eating raw, you know, breaking down raw, tiny little starch granules. Humans, on the other hand, our gut flora has evolved. They don't, all starch forms, they're all toxic. You can't eat raw tapioca. You can't eat raw beans, right?
Right.
You're going to die.
Right.
So our gut flora never ate raw, saw much raw. Other animals may, like rats, rodents, you know, that's fine for them. And the gut signature for rodents and hamsters are really different from humans. They don't have the flora that make our brains awesome, that make our, you know, mucosal lining tight. And they certainly don't have the flora that eat mucosa fiber as much, the oligosaccharides and fucose and things like that. So the gut, many millions of years ago, studies are showing that somehow that these researchers had the data, but the gut flora changed and there's an imprint, there's a certain signature. And the human one is really rich in eating oligosaccharides like inulin and other FODMAPs actually, and other fibers, psyllium and, you know, whole grains, whole beans and all kinds of vegetables, you know, romaine and lettuce and roots and stalks and leaves. And the cooked resistant starch is really the most awesome for humans. They break down into oligosaccharides. Raw starch, on the hand, because the granules are so tiny, the flora that eat it, they can only chew off like a glucose at a time. So in the human studies that came out, all of them have this like weird pattern. There's increased insulin. When they do body fat measuring, there's higher body fat. How do you get higher body fat with fiber? Well, you can with only raw starch.
Hmm.
Yeah, raw tapioca starch or raw. They use ham, which is high amylase, maize, corn starch. But the same thing happens with potato starch too. And in this other study by Bodingham in 2014, she had a study in metabolic syndrome patients. And they gave like a huge amount. So they saw the effect really, you know, clearly. 40 grams of ham, high amylase maize, they all had weirdly dysregulated guts after that, which totally coincides with, you know, what I would see like for yeast overgrowth and E. coli overgrowth. But they reported higher fatty pancreas. They did DEXA. They had higher fat mass and higher butyrate. So the problem is, many people already have tons of butyrate. You don't need more butyrate, but that's what raw starch can feed. All starches can increase butyrate, but raw starches particularly will feed these kind of hamster kind of gut flora, which humans don't have a lot of. And these grow, when I look at eubiome testing, all the human signature will go down, and then these like non-human, you know, signatures go up, and it corresponds to people not feeling so great often.
Right.
Sometimes they can tell, sometimes they can't. Like you could tell. Others really just cannot tell. And what I saw was, I was only kind of into the potato starch for a little while. When I was first looking at the rodent data, it looked really great. But then I started digging into the human, and it's like, oh my God, it increases cancer. Or in certain rodent studies, you know, if they had a instigating, you know, stressor, they had more cancers, more adenomas, more tumors. I'm like, what the heck is going on? And it's a hoax. Like if you look at the human data, now there's plenty. And now there's a couple rodent studies. They gave some maize granules to rodents. They had increased anxiety. They couldn't complete a maze. You know, they have these tests. They apparently have this way of testing their anxiety, and they had more anxiety. The problem is that raw starches can feed specifically E. coli. Again, these are really primitive kind of flora, yeast, E. coli, you know, and other ones. Humans have these too. And that's why, for instance, when I took it, or Matt Pepin, my co-host for Gut Guardians, when we took it, we just didn't feel well. I kept getting sick. My immunity was tanking. He couldn't sleep at all. Like it woke him up every night. So we happen to be kind of, I think, a little more aware of our bodies than some other people.
Gotcha. So, you know, one thing that I think has been hard for me to reconcile in all this stuff is, trying to look at kind of an ancestral template and then figure out what the right ratio of cooked versus raw input should be. And I mean,
ancestral template.
Okay. We had a brief pause there while Grace's vicious attack animal was viciously attacking nothing. So, you know, within this ancestral template, gosh, I'm thinking like 50 different things. One of them is you always want to wonder, maybe understand, how do you get into a certain problematic spot? You know, you're trying to map this thing. And there was a great paper talking about dense acellular carbohydrates disrupting the gut microbiome and whatnot. And so you know, once this gut biome gets disrupted, I guess this is the bugger and the challenge, you know, you start looking at the life history, like, were you born vaginally? Yes or no? Was your mom healthy during that time? Yes or no? You know, and health being a very nebulous term, you like.
Very subjective.
Yeah, my mom was alive and could do things, but she almost certainly had autoimmune disease and type 2 diabetes at this time, you know, and she was a lifetime smoker and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, were you breastfed? When was your first exposure to antibiotics? How long did you have antibiotics? Like, I was on antibiotics, tetracycline, from the age of 13 to like 20 because of acne.
Acne,
you know,
so many people are in that. Me too. I was on it for probably 6 months or something. Yeah.
I was on it for like a decade. So, you know, so you start trying to trace some of this stuff back. So there's a number of insults that seem to get us into a problematic spot. Mm-hmm. One of the primary insults being that we arguably don't eat enough traditional type fibers, probably a mix of both cooked and raw type of fermentable fibers. But then once you're in that spot, it is bedeviling difficult to get back out. You know, like, I've messed around, like I functionally, I feel best when I'm running right around that ketogenic level. And because of doing jujitsu, I can sneak in about 100 to 200 grams of carbs on, you know, the higher end on big training days, the lower end on more sedentary days. It seems like maybe once every 2 or 3 months, I'll do about 5 to 7 days, essentially ketotic to, you know, just kind of knock things down. And that seems to be where I'm operating pretty well. I know a lot of people end up getting better recovery and they're able to eat more carbs, more variety in carbs, are able to eat some beans and everything and maintain their blood glucose levels. There was also this paper that came out recently, the one in Cell, the personalized glycemic.
Yeah. You know, aren't they awesome?
Response. Yeah. It was totally amazing.
Out in Israel. Yeah.
Yeah. I've actually been shaking those guys down with some questions. So I'm hoping to get them on the podcast, and I've been, two of the people have been kind enough. I basically, there's like 50 people, you know, listed as authors on there, and I wrote them all the same form email, and I'm like, can I please ask you some questions? And like two of them responded yes. So I'm not even entirely sure what my question is here, other than, you know, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm glad you love that study, because Ludwig out in, I think his name is David Ludwig out in Harvard, he's found the same thing. You know, if people have good insulin sensitivity, it really doesn't matter what the crap they eat.
Right.
If you have good insulin sensitivity, you may or may not have long lifespan, you know, depending on your genetics and how bad the damage is or whatever, but you can kind of eat whatever you want and you'll have really good A1Cs and good insulin sensitivity. But if you're insulin resistant, you know, and we can be insulin resistant all manners of ways, like having adrenal insufficiency, having pharmaceutical toxins like I did, you know, or you have poor gut health. So let's say you have pharmaceutical toxins and poor gut health, you know. You know, you're insulin resistant, or you're on potato starch, and then now your insulin resistance is like way, way high, like a fat hamster. You know, we can get insulin resistant from so many different ways, and then what we eat does make a difference. And then what I would put out there is, okay, so we have like microorganisms living all over us. No part of our body is really sterile. Our bladder is not sterile. You know, nothing's sterile. For sure, like, you know, babies are not born sterile. They've come up, you know, with new data now, the placenta has bacteria and yeast in it, you know, and these really impact the baby and imprint the baby when the baby's born. So since we're not sterile and we're full of these microorganisms, they are searching some, especially the most toxic ones, the ones that make tons of histamines, you know, Morganella, Klebsiella, Hafnia, you know, all these kind of not so great things in our gut. And they're not bad, but when we're missing the BJJ warriors that should be out on the mucosal lining, right? They're like, or Krav, you know, whatever. You know, when we have the SWAT team out there, we don't worry about things breaking down the mucosal lining, hyperpermeability, or their endotoxins, you know, leaking into our bloodstream because it's protected, right? It's when the good flora are gone and then they overgrow. Klebsiella, Morganella, E. coli, yeast, and these all spew out a bunch of things like histamine. That's why people don't feel really well. They get brain fog or cloggy. You know, it's just the sinuses that get clogged up and congested. Our gut can get clogged up and congested too, and our brains for sure. And then these, you know, make a difference how we handle sugar. I love the probiotic I formulated. It has really high bifidolongum. Bifidolongum has something called the bifido shunt. So as soon as we our complex carbs get broken down, there's glucose, right, as the monomer, the monosaccharide.
Mm-hmm.
We have glucose, fructose, whatever. And with the bifido shunt, they suck up the monosaccharide and then it goes where it's supposed to go. Bifido takes it up or it helps upregulate it so that our body takes it up. And that's why we feel full, you know, we feel satiated and happy, you know, after we eat, if we get the nutrients. So a lot of people don't get that after they eat. They're starving at the cellular level because their gut cannot upregulate all these foods. Instead, they're feeding bad flora and yeast and they're putrefying up in the gut. So let's say we have actually different kind of toxic flora and then we go lower and lower in our carb intake. The toxic flora still want sugar, whether like, you know, bifido sucking it up or there's no bifido to suck it up. There's sugar around. And if we deprive them of it, where do they go? So our bloodstream is like 70, 80, 90, 100 milligrams per deciliter sugar, right? Guess where they go?
So they start piercing the intestinal wall.
Yeah, and, exactly. Huh. I think they start going near our bloodstream. They pierce the condom. And then boom, life ends. But it's a slow life ending.
Slow life ending and not a lot of fun along the way.
Yeah,
similar to having kids. Yeah, yeah. So the condom analogy is working perfectly.
We used to have dozens of kids and we only have like two.
Right. Interesting.
But they'd be helping us on the farm and like milking the cows.
Right, right.
My kids do that.
Right. Well, Zoe collects chicken eggs every day, so she's earning a little bit of her keep now. Sagan is still just sponging off the system, but she's not yet 2 years old, so I guess I'll let that fly for a little while longer. So, I know because I've talked to you and I'm doing some work with you that you do testing, trying to figure out where the person is in this spectrum, and then figure out what the heck do we do to you know, fix this situation. Let's say that the gut's been broken for whatever reason. A person's been doing low carb and they generally felt better, but maybe they've driven this process into a cul-de-sac. You know, this is not getting them out into the broader world. They have a very small bubble that they can kind of exist in. What are you doing to try to help them get out of that bubble? And I mean, a lot of it is dealing with these pathogenic gut bugs. So how are we doing that?
I have several phases of weeding, but they're very, very super gentle because I found even through myself, you know, that you can overweed. And then I had difficulty actually losing body fat once I overweeded. And that was kind of a pain in the ass. So there's a problem. Like there's a fine balance. Like we don't want to overweed and we want to overseed. We definitely want to provide as much like ultra potent probiotic as possible, along with the, you know, really awesome soil probiotics. Like Prescriptus is just amazing. It just gives people so much flexibility. I could eat, you know, gluten and dairy after I started it. So I just love that probiotic. And then now with our new one, the ultra potent one, I can extend people. They can liberalize their diet a lot faster as well. Like, Kyle Kingsbury is a great friend, and he loves my bionic fiber. He and his wife Tasha, they did it. They actually got super fat on potato starch, just like a lot of people do. It feeds yeast, it feeds E. coli. Some people can tell, you know, but they were super acute with their body. They read the signs and they could. And they were like on and off. They're kind of cyclical, you know, low carb, high carb. So they could tell actually. But on bionic fiber, Kyle got really super strong and stopped getting sick. When I work with people, it's great to look at Ubiome or any kind of testing. I prefer Genova and urine testing because with urine testing, we can see what is actually spewing into the blood. And then, which gets filtered by the kidneys and then ends up in the urine. So when I see what's in the urine, we can see multiple metabolites if they are spewing out of the gut from the gut flora. And what I found is that even people who are super low carb, they, you know, their yeasts are there and spewing out stuff because yeasts are so like, you know, they've been with us since the dawn of time and before mammals. Yeasts are eukaryotic, just like human cells, and they can thrive anywhere. And they are adapted to even eat ketones. We can feed them yeast and candida and Saccharomyces and other fungi. They're awesome biodiesel factories for ethanol, right?
Right.
So how can you make a cheap form of ethanol? You can feed them raw yeast like potato pulp and all kinds of stuff. And then they will crank out alcohol. And that happens in a lot of bodies too. Like a lot of the crazy people on potato starch, they're just full of alcohol and weird like crap. And what I saw when people were doing that was like they get fatter and fatter, you know, and they restrict their diet more and more, you know, because they have to, because they're getting fatter and fatter. That's because raw starches specifically selectively feed yeast, very primordial fungi. So by looking at testing, we can get the right kind of fiber. Actually, in the beginning, it's not great to have a lot of fiber because you're trying to remodel the upper gut, which is very tender. There's only like one cell layer that separates all these, like, you know, a trillion or two bacteria and yeast from our bloodstream, you know, because the condom's broken. So we want to fix the condom. There's multiple ways to do that. You know, there's special fibers, arabinogalactan. It's mostly actually probiotics that can seal the mucosal lining. That's how nature intended. That's ancestrally, medically what happens, you know. It's only when we lose things, like we lose acidity or we lose the enzymes that keep toxic flora out of the, you know, stomach and small intestines, then the whole thing falls apart. And when these overgrowths happen, they affect the liver. You can see it on liver testing. Mm-hmm. All the things that stream out of the small intestines, they stream through into the portal vein over to the liver. So unless someone's on a bunch load of, you know, liver support, you can always see damage on the liver often.
Basically, ALT, AST, yeah, elevating, yeah. Right.
Unless they've been super low carb for a while. That actually can heal the liver too. Like, it takes a year, but if someone's been low carb for over a year, you won't see the liver damage as much. But you can always check the urine oat. So I look at the urine organic acid. I love Great Plains. There's 9 markers for bacterial overgrowth and 9 markers for fungal overgrowth. Actually 10 if you include oxalates. So a lot of time people have oxalates and they don't know why. It's actually from yeast. They generate a lot of oxidase. And then when there's yeast overgrowth, they prevent bifido, lacto, and soil probiotics from colonizing. And these are the ones that break down oxalates. Ancestrally, we get soil probiotics, you know, from our environment, our food, and contamination. And we also have bifido and lacto from our moms, you know, from fermented foods. And these break down oxalates. So as soon as you have an antibiotic or you're super low carb, you may lose bifido and lacto and good probiotics, or you don't take probiotics, you know, or you don't take probiotic foods, fermented foods, you don't have these that break down oxalates, and then yeast overgrow and they produce more oxalates. So oxalates are a big problem for a lot of people. You know, when they crystallize, in autistic kids, they cause this eye pain and they'll poke their eye. They'll want to poke their eye. Other people can have bladder problems, you know, hip joint problems. It's actually just the oxalates crystallizing out. It's just not fun. Yeah. It's as bad as uric acid for gout.
And that was like something that Jeff Leach talked about when he was looking at the Hudsa, that they had these strains of oxalate metabolizing bacteria. So, like, you know, there's been this kind of weird thing that if people did a big pile of, huge pile of greens, or if the greens were a little bit long in the tooth or a little bit older, then the oxalic acid content of these greens would increase. And, you know, it's an anti-predation tool, but it was interesting. You know, Leach pointed out that the Hadza eat a ton of these things and you know, would theoretically have a very high oxalate intake. And so you might think about like kidney stones and some problems, but they had a strains of bacteria that metabolized the oxalate. So that was definitely
interesting observation. Yeah. Thanks, Rob. Because like in Japan, they eat a lot of, raw and cooked, seaweed. Yeah. And they have, only one particular strain, Bacteroides plebeius, appears to have the DNA, the machinery make the proteins that break down certain forms of the fiber in seaweed. And it's funny, when I look at people's eubiome, if they've lived in Japan for a while or they eat a lot of seaweed here in the U.S., they have it. They have Bacteroides plebeius. So I don't know how it gets entrenched in their gut, but they are able to maintain it. And so we can outsource these bugs that do a lot for us. And that's why I love our formula and soil probiotics like Prescriptasys, because like our Ultra Bifido Maximus and Prescriptasys, this combination, it just allows people to eat so many things. They break down. So these strains in studies, I don't know if our particular ones do, but you know, when you look at studies, to me, that's like the proxy. These strains, like Bifido and Lactobacillus and the soil probiotics and Prescriptasys, they break down mycotoxins, they break down gliadin, and they break down casein and lactose. So people who take these, they overcome like the intolerance that they might have had prior, and they can liberalize their diet then. I mean, I'm not saying it's perfect, but so I was talking about Kyle. I'm sorry, I kind of got off track, but he couldn't eat gluten forever. Like, I'm like, dude, you should be able to eat a little bit, you know, and not flare like a little girl, or, you know, have bloating like a little girl. So he took the Ultra Bifido Maximus, and now he has no bloating. For Tasha's birthday, they ate a whole boatload of like apple pie or apple streusel or something, and no problems at all. But he used to get brain fog and bloating. So not everyone gets these rapid changes, but if we are able to remodel the gut, and he's done a couple rounds of like anti-candida things like over the years, you know, prior to all this. So with antibiotics, you know, as a pharmacist, we would always counsel people with antibiotics, like, oh, okay, well, if you're a girl, you know, and you have signs of, you know, yeast infection, you know, let your doctor know it's probably the, you know, antibiotic because it's wiped out all your good stuff. And now, you know, nothing to combat, you know, no more jiu-jitsu fighters
right.
to combat the yeast. The men have this too with any course of antibiotics. And the more antibiotics they have, the more like yeast overgrowth. And it shows up in funny ways. Like they can't put down lean mass. They can be psycho crazy. Or you can have like all kinds of weird autoimmune problems. You know, these are potentially yeast overgrowths with other toxic flora overgrowths. And skin problems, or fatty liver, fatty pancreas, you know, inability to break down carbs, complex carbs, because you don't have the pancreatic enzymes to break them down.
So
it's all kind of tied together, but I find centrally at the root is a lot of gut things. And now when I help people to rebuild their biome, you know, we do the testing, but we have multiple ways, multiple levels to heal everything along the path, you know. So we have, you know, we have adrenal support, we have pancreas support, you know, it's not a ton of pills actually, but there, I work in phases with people, generally about 6 phases, so that we can rebuild all that. And then the toward the middle and the end, we can rebuild the gut microbiome with lots of fiber, prebiotics, which is fiber, another fancy name for fiber. So with the flora and the fiber, we can do so many things. We don't need a fecal microbiota transplant, and people's health can restore. Like I have so many people now, you know, their antibodies for autoimmune disease go down. They can eat a lot of things, the psoriatic plaques or eczema plaques, they all fall off within the first, you know, few weeks. People's minds, their brain can rebuild. They feel more calm. They don't have that internal agitation. Recently this year, I've added in nutrigenomics, and I have a friend, a colleague who works at the higher level for some really, you know, intense things. But I do basic nutrigenomics with people, and we look at a lot of different variants because this determines why, you know, if they're turned on and expressing. Not everyone expresses, but if they're turned on, you know, we want to work on it. You know, a lot of people, they have GAD1 mutations, and they just can't feel calm. You know, this mutation, when it's mutated, we don't make as much GABA. GABA is our like Zen, you know, neurotransmitter. And if we can't make that, people get addicted because every time you get something that makes you happy, you know, then you want it again.
Right.
Yeah. So the mutations are there, and then we can change some of it. So it'll help change behavior, but ultimately also helps recover the gut faster. One, you know, a lot of these are histamine too, and ammonia pathways, COMT. MTHFR, BHMT, DAO. When we have like all the dopamine breaking down, some people have lots of dopamine and then some people don't have enough. Either way, it's not great for the gut or the brain. When there's too much dopamine, to make dopamine, we need ammonia and tryptophan. And then, depends on the pathway sometimes. And when they break down, we can get ammonia, and we can also get other things, formaldehyde, hydrogen peroxide. All these things are super inflammatory. They're super inflammatory for the brain. They break down neurons and all the dopaminergic pathways. So it becomes this like vicious cycle. In the gut, our second brain, which has like 100 million neurons, if we have these all breaking down, like of course people's gut don't feel well, and they don't trust their gut.
So Grace, if somebody is, you know, I wrote my book 6 years ago, and when I wrapped up the book, I was like, okay, I'm going to go farm coconuts because this is going to save the world and I really won't need to do anything else. And this is the end of the story. And then, you know, clearly I was an idiot and, you know, it's,
farming's awesome.
That wouldn't be a bad gig right now at all. But, you know, where should folks jump in on this ship? And then where, you know, so...
Okay, so like you were asking about the ratio of like raw and cooked.
Yeah.
You know, in the beginning, if your gut's really messed up and your gates are open and you don't have the gatekeepers, you know, you don't have good soil probiotics, you don't have good, you know, oxalate degrading bacteria, you don't have lactobacilli and bifido. I'm sorry, all these are probably foreign to a lot of people, but I'll just name those scientific names. But if we don't have the gatekeepers, I kind of feel like eating raw foods and vegetables are a little like – going to Vegas and, you know, hanging out with lots of hot people and strippers. It's right. Like dangerous. You know, you don't know the elements and you don't know how much trouble you're going to get into. So until the gates are closed and things are safe and, you know, somewhat okay, like, I think it's better to eat kind of cooked foods in the beginning, but we definitely want to transition to organic and soil covered foods like when we can, you know, when it's a good time, and when the gates are closed. Because unfortunately, with the good, there's always a little bad as well, right? Yeah. But in the beginning, if we're missing all the, you know, the gut warriors and the guardians and the BJJ, you know, warriors, if we get exposed to anything, we're going to just be open. It's just open game, you know, anything could happen. This is why when there's like, so a lot of athletes, you know, like you hear of all these stories like Christy Willington or, you know, certain cyclists, you know, they have to drop out of a race. You know, they have like massive sore throat, sore brain, or, you know, gut problems, you know, some flu, some stomach flu went through like all the teams or something, right? Some people get super sick and some people will stay super fine and they're okay. It's probably their immunity and, you know, a lot of genetic factors, but also their gut. And studies do show like Vibrio. Yeah, they can give Vibrio to some volunteers and they see who gets sick and who doesn't. The ones who don't get sick have plenty of Bifido and Lacto. And they probably have other ones like solar probiotics that at the time they couldn't do the GWAS studies or the 16S, you know, like phylogenetic studies. They probably couldn't see that in the gut microbiota. Yeah, but now we can, you know, and a lot of these we understand. Like there's an ancestral template, and when you don't have it, you may feel fine on the outside, but it's like a car, you know, let's say half the engine's there. You can kind of work, you know, and the car may look perfectly fine on the outside, but it's got half the engine. Like how far is it really going to go, right?
Right. On the testing side, what are some things that you feel comfortable recommending that, I mean, we've always, you know, like doing a basic, you know, blood work, fasting, triglycerides, HDL, LDL, you know, as a beginning point. Now, yeah. I think we're at a point where you definitely have to have LDL particle count in there. Like, otherwise it's just kind of a crapshoot. Like, you could have two different flavors of discordance, and without the LDL particle count, we really don't know what's going on with that. What else is reasonable, even if maybe we don't have the full data on this yet? Like, is it reasonable to be doing a U-biome or something like that so that people just have a baseline? Like, what are the baseline things that aren't going to break the bank but are reasonable to throw in the mix?
You know, for me, I kind of feel like a professional, like housekeeper, but I'm more actually like a portfolio manager. Like if you're looking, talking about finances, and a lot of people can, you know, think they can do their own portfolio management, but they may not really know what's going on and they may not really know the market. I mean, a lot of people can order these, and I do offer like the U-Biome consult, or, you know, it's a 30-minute consult and I can help people look at what's going on in there, and give them, you know, some ideas and things. I think it's fun to order it, you know, as the testing gets better and when new products come out, like hopefully, I'm hoping to launch something later, but, you know, giving algorithms and helping people to understand what is healthy and good and what is not and how to get there. I think that will be elevated, you know, in the next year or two with all these like fantastic things coming out. Right now, I think it's kind of hard. Like I look at the U-Biome dashboard and oh my God, it like totally sucks. It doesn't tell you anything. And it just makes people more and more confused, I believe. And, you know, but I think they're fun. I think they're really great to get the conversation going. I sell all the kits, you know, the Genova kit, the urine kits from both Genova and Great Plains. And there are a lot of, you know, great interpretive guides. They're on my website. And people, you know, you can just read it and you can kind of diagnose certain things on your own. You know, if you had a Tesla car, Rob, you know, if you have your manual, you kind of can figure out a lot of things, you know, if certain lights go up, right, or certain warnings go on, or, you know, certain things, right. But if there's something more intense going on, I think it's always great to meet with someone who understands a lot of the gut microbiota studies and how it impacts our organic acids and our physiology and function. Hopefully, you know, the Gut Institute and some of my colleagues and I, we're going to, you know, do more training and how this relates with nutrigenomics later in the winter and part of next year. But for now, yeah, I mean, I think it's great to start because people are really wondering, you know, what is good? What, you know, how do they feel? And then how does it relate to a U-biome? I have a couple cases on my website on thegutinstitute.com, like Eli Markstrom. He's an amazing Spartan athlete. I don't know if you heard his podcast, Rob, but I have a post up on my website about Eli. Oh, Rob, are you there? And
Sorry.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Okay.
There was a guy. So I'm doing the podcast not from home like I usually do because we're homeless while we're doing our remodel. I'm actually in my office downtown, and the leaf blower guy just started walking by. So I ended up muting it for a couple of seconds there. So yeah, I've listened to the podcast with Eli about four times, and it was super interesting where, you know, what he described, where he was motoring along pretty well on a ketogenic diet, but he just felt like he had this governor, like he didn't have the low gear. And what was interesting to me is that, you know, he's I think he was running about 30% carbohydrate, which for my total energy needs is only about 150 grams a day. Like, so we're not talking about like 800 grams of carbs for me or something. But, you know, when I hang in that range, it seems to be a pretty good balance between having decent cognition, good performance. I still think I've got some gut issues that I need to figure out. But like he said that, you know, when he made that tweak and then he started doing the bionic fiber and then your probiotic blend, that it was just like night and day difference on his performance, recovery and whatnot.
Oh yeah. He went from like, he was already like you, super hot, 10% body fat. He went to 7.4 or something insane. Yeah. And then he had this weird knee pain. It totally went away. His sleep became perfect. What was really profound is there, people have signs that their gut is not doing well. He had a lot of loose stools. Every time he did bulletproof coffee, he'd get loose stools. He'd have to run to the toilet. I mean, that's not normal. Anything you eat, you should be okay. And your body and your gut flora should be able to break it down, essentially, you know. But after he did prebiotics and the bionic fiber and probiotics and actually a set of weeding, then he was good to go. He was like solid gold. And then he got invited to the elite Spartan races. Like you have to actually apply and he was accepted to that. So his performance just went out the roof. In addition to the body fat going down, which he was really pleased. That wasn't his goal at all, but that improved. And also his brain got better. He had all these weird cravings like for sugar and food that all went away within a few weeks. And his acne improved. He did go dairy free, like pure paleo, more dairy free and gluten free. He cut out dairy. And then with the protocol, his skin totally improved. No more eruptions and, you know, really improved. And that's what a lot of people tell me. You know, their optimism gets even better. You know, their mood gets even better. And then if they have residual skin issues, those should get better as well. So he had a weeding protocol. Yeah. And I know some people like to do them, but it should be done carefully, I think. You know, make sure you don't lose the good flora and do testing to verify that. And then choosing ultra potent or, you know, a wide range of probiotics that you can tolerate. Some people can't tolerate histamines. And a lot of the probiotics on the market are histamine producers, so they don't feel so hot on it. And I finally made my own because I couldn't find it on the market, but it's a completely histamine-free ultra probiotic, and they're the strains that mimic mother's milk. You know, healthy moms and babies, they have plenty of these. They're in their gut, they're in the milk, because our milk is not sterile either.
Right.
It comes from our mom, makes it, you know, it's the flora from the gut. They come up through the lymph circulation from the gut all the way up and then into the mastoid tissues, you know, and into the lymph, and it goes straight into the milk. So it can seed the baby. It's the legacy from mom to the next generation.
Right.
Yeah. And then healthy babies don't have these strains. They don't have bifida longum. They have weird other strains, a lot of E. coli, a lot of strep. And so, celiac babies, same thing. They have E. coli, strep, and they have starch eating bifida, but they don't have the mucin eating bifida longum. And that's why I really didn't like about potato starch either, because if people did have bifida longum, it would go down on potato starch. There's no way it could resurrect. They would lose it. And they would lose all the other mucosa BJJ stars.
Right, right.
With potato starch. Like, it was just awful. Like, they'd all go down.
Right.
And then there's one dude, oh my God, he kept bugging me, like Richard Sprague. I like him. He's so good at testing, but I, you know, he wouldn't see how, like, certain strains are good or bad. He'd have all these flares of Clostridium on potato starch, like Clostridium botulinum, and then he'd lose all the good ones, Acromantia and bifida longum. They'd all like disappear. He actually had them. So a lot of people don't even have these in the gut. And he actually had them because he's relatively healthy, you know. And then he wouldn't check any other markers. Like, I'm like, you have to look at your body fat. He wouldn't measure his waist size, you know. He wouldn't look at A1C. He wouldn't look at his lipids or his liver function test. I'm like, well, dude, you really don't know what's going on. It's like, you're checking to see your engine's working and you're looking at your brake fluid. I'm like, what the fuck?
Right.
Okay, so the problem with the gut testing is people just aren't correlating physiology, you know, body fat, performance, brain function, you know, with the microbes there. And you can now. There's like the Israeli study with the customized cell, you know, the customized GI index and gut microbiota, you know, the improvements in blood sugars. Right. What a profound study. That cell study is just a game changer.
Yeah.
And it's everything that we already knew, kind of, you know, that the microbiota can do a lot of things for us.
It definitely answered a lot of the, you know, one, it answered the, is there a one size fits all dietary approach? No. You know, so that it kind of answered that. And then it definitely cleared up some of the things that we would see clinically, you know, like just even though I'm like the paleo guy, you know, I'd look at a food like hummus and I'm like, dude, you would need to be a private detective to find an insulin response from hummus. And this ended up being one of the foods in this study, which about 50% of the people were favorable responders and 50% were really unfavorable. And the unfavorable people tended to already be dyslipidemic, insulin resistant, and tended to have a profile of what we would characterize as pathogenic gut microbiota. So there was something about the fermentable carbohydrates in that were not really doing those folks specifically any favors. So that was pretty fascinating.
Yeah. They probably have more yeast and E. coli and strep and all those starch eaters as well as starch eaters.
That's a whole interesting thing too, is all of this stuff is still currently only looking at bacteria and nobody is looking at yeast yet. So as we get it, so what would it be? So we've got the microbiome and then the fungibiome, I guess. Or mycobiome, is what it would be. Yeah, mycobiome.
Yeah. Well, there's an awesome obesity gut microbiota study. They compared healthy controls and obese subjects' gut microbiota, the mycobiome. And they actually had equal numbers of fungi, but the obese ones had way more candida and way more nasty, yeast and inflammation-inducing kind of fungi versus the healthy controls. Yeah, so it's quality over quantity. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, Grace, we could go on for days and days and days. Let's wrap this here and then let's circle back when your book is about ready to be released and check back in with you on that. And then in the interim, where can folks track you down on the interwebs?
I'm on the interwebs. I'm a little slower on the website. You can find me on Twitter. I like to post all my favorite studies over there. And if you want to contact our office, it's the contact information on my website, thegutinstitute.com. And we're also on Facebook, The Gut Institute. Thanks so much for having me on.
Oh, it was awesome having you on.
Talk more poo later.
I always say that I'm the king of poo. Apparently, you're the queen of poo. So
we rule the poo
kingdom. So
yeah.
Awesome, Grace. Well, it was great connecting with you, and looking forward to seeing you. Are you going to be at Paleo FX?
I sure am. Cool. I will. And ancestral AHS.
I should be at AHS as well.
Awesome. Cool.
Okay. Well, we'll do some barbecue and hang out.
That sounds great.
Okay, Grace. Talk to you soon.
Great. Thank you, Bob.
Bye.
Bye.